And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, where we go wall-to-wall with defending, explaining, sharing the faith, and being able to do it with confidence, clarity, and charity. So welcome. Great to be with you today. Got a great show in store for you today. We're going to answer questions about non-believers. A non-believer might say, why should I believe in God when there are so many reasonable people who don't? Well, to help us investigate and explode that question, we have Master Apologist Carlo Brassard, Catholic Answers, is going to join us. We're going to work through different aspects of that objection. And, you know, I guess we could probably title this episode, Is Theism for Dummies? Question mark. Well, Carlo's going to show us, no, that is not true. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's always great to have Carlo on the show. And, you know, I should mention, for those who maybe are just joining the show, maybe you're searching your radio dial, what we're all about. Well, we have some of the best Catholic apologists in the nation join us, like Carlo Brassard. We've had Carl Keating, Marcus Grodi, just a whole host of incredibly talented people that are nationally known. And by the way, we also invite to the show some up-and-coming new apologists, converts to the Catholic faith. And in fact, Thursday and our Friday show, we're going to have a couple. But that's what we do. So we kind of tap into their thinking skills so that we can imitate them and explain, share the faith. Another thing, too, we do at Hands-On Apologetics is we give exercises to help us get the skill sets in order to explain, defend the faith. And as you guys know, every episode we have a Finding the Fallacy, where we look at an informal fallacy, and that helps us to think critically. And today's Finding the Fallacy, by the way, is the appeal to authority. And we also meet one of the early church fathers. And that's what I love about this show. It's not a, God willing, it's a good show, but it's also a show that is good for you. So if you're a listener to this program, you're going to know a lot of defining fallacies, informal fallacies. You're going to be able to pick those out. And you're also going to know many of the early church fathers. And I know that many of our viewers are way ahead of the game in terms of your knowledge of the early church. And by the way, today's Meet the Early Church Father is Hippolytus of Rome, a very cool story behind him. So we'll get to that soon. But first, I need to give my shout outs to those watching live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. All right. It's got the emoji explosion going on there in YouTube. Never heard of Carlo Brassard. Well, you're in for a treat. Also, I want to thank everybody listening on radio and also listening via podcast. By the way, if you want to get a podcast version of this program, just go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or get our phone app, and you can access all the great podcasts, not only here on Hands-On Apologetics, but all the other great programs as well. Before I forget, I want to give you guys a heads up. Like I said, here in the dojo, we are partnering with other people in the field, and I'm going to be doing a live YouTube feed event on August 21st, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with two great guys, great apologists in their own right, John DeRosa of ClassicalTheism.com, and also Pat Flynn of The Pat Flynn Show. We are going to give basically a YouTube event about apologetics in the 21st century. It's free. Like I said, August 21st, 7 p.m., you can get a bunch of freebies, a free ebook. You can get also, each of us is going to give a defense of the faith. John DeRosa is going to give a defense of theism. I'm going to give a defense of whether Jesus is the Messiah and Son of God. Pat Flynn about whether Jesus established a church. We're going to pre-record that and offer it as freebies to those who sign up. And you're probably asking, well, how do I sign up? Well, just go to handsonapologetics.com. And just click under the banner, under the show banner, It says how something to the effect of how never to lose a religious argument. Click on that. That gives you the sign-up sheet, and you get the ebook, and you're also going to get those other freebies as well as invite to the live event on YouTube. So I just want you to know, you know, we're all partnering together because you know, we need to be able to give the world an explanation for the reason of hope that's in us. So there you go. So why don't we jump to our Finding the Fallacy segment. And our Finding the Fallacy, like I said, is the appeal to authority. Now, this is there's actually two kind of different versions of this fallacy out there. So I'll give you both. The first version of this appeal to authority is, now remember, a fallacy is an invalid manner of arguing or demonstrating something. So the first instance of the appeal to authority that's fallacious is by insisting that a claim is true simply because a valid authority or expert, quote unquote, on the issue says it's true without any supporting evidence offered. Okay. So basically, it's like someone saying, well, my pastor says that verse so-and-so means this. Therefore, that's... Okay, so that would be the one version of a fallacious use of authority. Okay, because after all, you just can't rely on one person's authority. You need to have supporting reasons for belief. The second version is, I think, probably the most used, or at least if you look up a definition, I believe this is probably the most common definition of the appeal to authority, and that is when somebody appeals to an authority whose subject is outside of that person's competence. Okay, for example, if you are appealing to a theologian as an authority in a matter of chemistry, or you appeal to a chemist as an authority on religion or theology. Now, assuming that there's nothing in their backgrounds that makes them competent in both areas, that would be fallacious. That'd be a wrong way of arguing. Why? Because, for example, someone who is an expert in physics really basically has no special competence to talk about growing vegetables. Okay. Now, they might be a fan of growing vegetables. They may have grown vegetables themselves, but really, that's their opinion is no different than anybody else. Unless, again, there's something in their background, like maybe they went to school and have a minor or even a major, double major on that, then they would be in a proper authority to cite. So that's our Finding the Fallacy for today, the appeal to authority. And why don't we jump to the Meet the Early Church Father for today, who is St. Hippolytus of Rome, who died A.D. 235, very early church father. And St. Hippolytus is a very interesting church father at that. He is the first antipope. Okay, now what's an antipope? An antipope is basically someone who is elected improperly after a valid pope has been seated. Okay, and the story will explain itself. But he's the first antipope, and he's also the one of only two, of two or three dozen antipopes throughout church history to have received the title of saint and to be honored at the altar. Okay, so he's actually a saint and martyr, Hippolytus, as well as an antipope, which makes it kind of interesting, you know. Beyond a few key facts, there's not a lot to know about him. We first meet him in Rome, but there doesn't seem to be any particular connection to Rome. In fact, according to his writings, he seems not to be Roman at all, but to have a very good understanding of philosophy, and especially certain theological attributes that kind of mimic the Alexandrian school of thought in Egypt. So chances are St. Hippolytus wasn't Roman. He was probably, you know, at least a part of that school in Alexandria. And Hippolytus, however, does make his way to Rome, and he gets into conflict with Pope St. Callistus, taking an extremely rigorous view of the question of the reconciliation or readmittance of sinners. In other words, he believed that those who fell away from the faith during persecution shouldn't be readmitted at least not without extremely strict measures. Well, Pope Callistus took an attitude of leniency, and at least much more lenient than those they're accustomed to at that time. Now, he was then elected, quote-unquote, Bishop of Rome by a small group of devoted followers, and thus he became Hippolytus, the first anti-pope in the time of Callistus, who basically reigned between 217 and 222. So basically he makes a schism, and his small group of followers elect him as pope, so he becomes anti-pope. And this continues through a couple of pontificates, such as Pope St. Urban I, and also Pope St. Pontanius, until 235 AD. Now, here's where things get interesting, folks. In the latter year, both Pontanius and Hippolytus are exiled by the Emperor Maximin Therax to Sardinia. So they are exiled to Sardinia, which is basically a death sentence. They're going to be worked to death. And Pope Pontanius, he resigns his see in September of 235 AD in order to enable the Roman Church to elect a successor. And possibly Hippolytus may have done the same as well. In any case, he and the Pope seem to have been reconciled to each other in Sardinia, and they both died very soon as martyrs. So the schism ended, and already in 235 AD, the united community elected a new pope, Pope St. Anturus, as the successor, and Pope St. Fabian, 235 to 250, brought the bodies of both martyrs back from Sardinia to Rome, and the rest is history. So that's our Meet the Early Church Father today, is St. Hippolytus of Rome. Coming up on the other side of the break, Master Apologist Carlo Broussard's joining us. We're going to talk about belief in God.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God, and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody, to Hands-On Apologetics. And joining us is Master Apologist Carlo Broussard. Carlo is the native of Crowley, Louisiana. He left a promising music career and devoted himself full-time to the work of Catholic apologetics. He's published a variety of subjects in Catholic Answers magazine. He's also a regular guest on Catholic Answers Live. He's an active blogger at Catholic.com, and he also has undergraduate and graduate degrees of theology from the Catholic Distance University and the Augustine Institute. He's currently working and his master's in philosophy. Actually, I'm going to need to ask him whether or not that needs to be updated. And he also worked for several years in an apprenticeship with nationally known author and theologian Dr. Robert Spitzer of the Magis Center of Reason and Faith. And he's the author of a great book that I think everybody should pick up. It's an awesome book that this is part of. It's called Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church from Catholic Answers Press. And Carlo, welcome to Hands On Apologetics.
Hey, Gary, it's great to be back in the dojo, my friend.
Yeah, it's always fun to have you on board. Now, I was reading your bio. Are you still currently working on your master's?
No, I finished it. So I got my master's in philosophy now through Holy Apostles College and Seminary.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a great accomplishment. So what's the next step? That's the question, right? Where do I go from here, man?
Are you going for your doctorate?
Yeah, I would love to, actually, but when, where, how, only God knows the answers to those questions, because I sure as heck don't right now.
Yeah, I hear you. That's quite an undertaking.
Indeed, it's quite a mountain to climb. I remember a long time ago thinking, man, a master's in philosophy, what a mountain to climb, you know? And so now I'm at the peak of that mountain, and so I got to look up and it's like, oh Lord, now the next mountain of PhD is like going way up into the stratosphere, and I don't know how I'm going to climb it. So we'll see. If it's God's will or not. I'll leave it to him and ask for his guidance and direction.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, what would you do it on, by the way? Just the general field, where would it be?
I would probably do it in philosophy. And to be honest, my heart's desire would be to do it in some aspect of philosophy of religion, because that's where I really dig it. I love doing natural theology, examining the arguments for God's existence, diving deep into it. So I would probably try to do something in that area if I were to do it.
Very good. Yeah, and that's why you're in the dojo, because that's exactly what we love.
Amen. So, thank you, brother.
Yeah. So, let's talk about atheism. You know, atheists, you know, I've heard this a lot. They have a sense that, you know, only the reasonable, the intellectual, sophisticated, you know, hoi polloi, those are the people who don't believe in God. But I guess you could probably put it as theism is for dummies, you know. those who aren't.
That's the cultural myth, right? That's
the
myth that many buy into. If you want to belong to the intelligentsia and not get laughed out of the academic community, then you ought to reject God and embrace atheism. If you want to belong to, as you stated, the group of the dummies, the non-intelligentsia, then that's where faith comes in and belief in God and all that stuff. Yeah. And possibly, I think one of the reasons why many think this, perhaps, is they have sort of a sense, because all of those who have the loudest voices seemingly within our culture, who are given the time to express their views, or atheistic scientists or atheistic philosophers. And you get the sense, if you don't look into it carefully, that the majority of those intellectuals, those giants in the fields of science and philosophy, are atheists. And so if you're a normal Joe Blow in the street and you're thinking to yourself, well, I want to be intellectually credible and I'm going to follow, it's reasonable to follow those who are smarter than me and things beyond my reach, right? And my capability to know things. And so I guess I need to embrace atheism. Mm-hmm. And there are a few stats out there that would seem to indicate that is the case, that the majority of the intelligentsia embrace atheism. So for example, 93% of the members of the National Academy of Sciences, one of the most elite scientific organizations in the United States, deny God's existence. All right. So, I mean, that's a lot of scientists seemingly that deny God's existence. I mean, this is a pretty prestigious group here and some smart dudes and gals as well. Right. One study concerning philosophers found that 73% of professional philosophers are atheists. So if I'm sort of, you know, I don't have the intellectual chops to sift through all of the arguments for and against God's existence. So I'm going to try to rely on the experts and the people who know better. And when I'm looking at this, 93% of like top-notch scientists, National Academy of Sciences, 73% of philosophers are atheists. Well, by golly, I guess atheism is the more reasonable position as opposed to theism. And so therein lies sort of the motivation of your common Joe Blow on the street who is going to embrace atheism because he thinks, based upon this narrative, that to belong to the intelligentsia means you got to be an atheist. And so that's what I try to tackle and go against in my book, and at least one of the chapters in my book, and of course several chapters put together, you could say, to try and coach the reader in strategies on how to overcome that obstacle, the obstacle of the apparent intelligentsia, the majority of the intelligentsia embracing atheism. So how can I believe in God when so many reasonable people don't? And I think that's a legitimate question. You know, I don't want to trivialize that. And because it is a rational approach. I mean, think about it, Gary, in your own life, right? When it comes to things that you do not have the capability to know about or to study or to investigate, you normally rely upon the experts, right?
Right.
And you believe. I mean, that's sort of natural faith, right? That's a natural belief. You rely upon the experts. You accept their testimony as true. And so you have the knowledge by way of belief based upon the authority of the one, the authority of the testimony that you're relying on. So there's nothing irrational in this approach. But what we want to try to do is we want to try to point out for folks that, hey, we need to really be careful about whether or not these scientists, atheistic scientists and atheistic philosophers, are actually competent to pontificate on the God question. And then we can actually look at some of the numbers, the actual numbers, for the majority of philosophers who are competent on the God question, and even the majority of scientists as a whole within the United States, and whether or not they embrace theism or atheism. So we have to look at the numbers as well. And so those are a couple of strategies that we can unpack here in this broadcast.
Yeah, very good. In fact, you know, every episode we look at an informal fallacy. Today's informal fallacy is the appeal to authority.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it's a nice coincidence there.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially what you're outlining is, sure. You know, that everyone has limited competency. So everybody's not an authority on every subject.
That's correct. And so, I mean, fundamentally, it's not irrational to appeal to authority for the sake of knowledge by way of belief on condition that that authority is truly an authoritative source and is competent on the matter. And see, that's the key question. The
right.
question is that authoritative source competent on the matter that you're investigating? So, for example, Gary, would you trust a mechanic's views? Let's say you bring your car into the mechanic shop, right? Mechanic there at the counter starts pontificating on political issues about President Trump, etc. Would you trust a mechanic's views on politics because he's a good mechanic?
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Not, right? That's right. You know, the training that a mechanic receives as a mechanic doesn't equip him with political knowledge or wisdom, right?
Right.
And you can explain to your friend in conversation the same principle applies to what natural scientists and philosophers who are not trained in the philosophy of religion say about God's existence. So with regard to the scientists, the natural scientists, no amount of scientific training is going to equip a scientist to pursue the philosophical inquiry of God's existence, right?
Right, right.
if you shouldn't trust a mechanic's views on politics just because he knows cars, well, then why should you trust a scientist's views about God because he knows chemistry, right?
Right. Yeah, right.
God's existence, that he exists, and the divine attributes of God are beyond a scientist's expertise. As a matter of authority, his opinion on the matter is of equal value to that of any other educated non-scientist. I mean, God goes beyond the boundaries of the data source of scientists. So no matter how much science you know, you are not equipped based on that knowledge to pontificate on the God question, because the God question is more fundamental than science itself.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't look to a scientist qua scientist, right, insofar as he is a scientist, as an authoritative source for whether or not you should believe in God. And even, Gary, check this out. The same line of reasoning applies even to philosophers who aren't trained in the philosophy of religion, all right? Okay. So even if, for example, you have this stat of and by the way, when we come up on that break, let me know so I can shut up here.
Well, you got about a minute.
Okay. Even if we look at that stat of 73% of professional philosophers are atheists, right? That doesn't mean every one of those philosophers is competent when it comes to the question of God's existence any more than a biologist is competent in questions of astrophysics. Because you may have these philosophers who study philosophy, but not philosophy of religion, and have not considered in depth the arguments for God's existence, and therefore wouldn't be competent to pontificate on the God question. So we have to keep that in mind as well.
Okay, so even within philosophy, then, there are fields of expertise that you wouldn't be competent in discussing other fields.
That's right. Amen to that. You might have a philosopher of nature, philosopher of mind. You have the philosophy of religion. Just because you're an expertise of one area, it doesn't mean you're going to be competent to pontificate in other areas. And on the other side of the break, I know we're coming up on a break here, and on the other side of the break, I can give you an example of that from like Daniel Dennett in his one of his book, Breaking the Spell, and how he, as a philosopher, exposes his incapability, his non-competence, right? His incompetence in order to pontificate on the question of God and arguments for God's existence.
Very good. Yeah, because I think in the popular mind, you know, when we think of science, we just think of, well, if you're a scientist, you know everything. Or if you're a philosopher, you know everything about philosophy. That's very helpful. We're talking with Master Apologist Carl Brassard about the question of God. You know, is theism only for dummies? Dispelling the myth of the intelligentsia, all on the atheist side. More to come on the other side of the break. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics here at Akuta. Stay tuned, folks.
Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. It's going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to, or are called to, as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murray. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh and eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come, you want to bring your friends, you want to bring your daughters, your nieces, that's really an affordable day. So go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and you can register for this conference or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are chatting with Master Apologist Carlo Brassard about the question of, God's existence. Is all the intelligentsia, against God, and only a few ragtag non-scholars for the existence of God? And Carlo, before you break, you were talking about how we often don't appreciate the specialization that occurs in all different fields of knowledge. And we just assume, well, this guy has a PhD in philosophy, that he's competent to speak on all matters of philosophy.
That would be fallacious reasoning, right?
Yeah.
Because he may very well be competent to speak in one area of philosophy, but not another. And when it comes to the question of God's existence, we see this take place time and time again. So, for example, you have a brilliant scientist, right? A brilliant biologist like Richard Dawkins, who will go around trying to pontificate on philosophical matters when he pretty much exposes his lack of philosophical training when trying to do so, right?
Yeah.
So he's crossing a boundary there, trying to pontificate like the car mechanic pontificating in political matters as a car mechanic. You have people like Dawkins pontificating on philosophical matters pertaining to God's existence qua scientist, but he's crossing boundaries there and getting into areas where he's not competent to pontificate on. But even philosophers, as I mentioned prior to the break, you have some atheistic philosophers who pontificate on questions concerning God's existence, but really expose their lack of understanding of the nuances of those arguments for God's existence. And so you have evidence of even a brilliant philosopher in one area pontificating on the God question, but not being competent to do so. So one example I mentioned prior to the bit break I wanted to share with you is Daniel Dennett and his book Breaking the Spell. He's a very popular new atheist. And in his book, Breaking the Spell, he says that the cosmological argument, like the argument from the cosmos, looking at things in the world and trying to reason from effects to the ultimate cause, namely God, he says in its simplest form states that since everything must have a cause, the universe must have a cause, namely God. And then he asks, but then what caused God?
Right.
And that's that exposes a major lack of understanding of the cosmological arguments, plural, that theistic philosophers put forward in explaining or accounting for things, effects in the universe with God, especially like Aquinas's cosmological arguments or arguments from things in the world. So like, for example, his first way starts with motion. Aquinas does not say everything must have a mover, right, or a cause. He only says that which is in motion must be put in motion, must have its potential actualized by some actualizer outside of itself, right? And Aquinas' argument on being in essence in the De Ente, Aquinas says the premise of the argument is that being such that its essence is distinct from its existence needs a cause outside of itself, right? That's the premise. He's not saying everything needs a cause. For example, in Aquinas's third way, when he starts with things that are generable and corruptible, such things as that need a cause. And in the fourth way, graded perfection, grades of being, a hierarchy of being, basically, the premise is that which is graded in being, which is more or less in being, does not have being by its virtue, by virtue of its own essence, and as such, needs a cause. So notice the nuanced approach of these arguments of St. Thomas Aquinas. He's not saying everything must have a cause like Dennett thinks theists say. In fact, it's more nuanced in saying this particular type of thing, that particular type of thing, that particular type of thing needs a cause. And then from that, in Aquinas's arguments, you reason to an uncaused cause that metaphysically is necessary in order to explain why this particular thing, that particular thing, exists in the way it does or exists in the first place rather than not. So that's sort of what we find. This is common among new atheists in contemporary culture, in thinking that, oh, Aquinas's arguments are proven false and they don't work, and here's the reason why, you know, just an exposure of their lack of understanding of the nuances of the arguments.
Yeah.
Not even the nuances. I mean, just plain plain fundamental basic premises, right?
Right. You know, and as an observation, if I'm reading somebody who's purported to be one of the greatest minds in history, and I come up with something that seems so obviously wrong, you know, that would be a red flag to me that I'm not understanding something correctly. Like if a third grader could figure out that the argument everything has a cause and therefore, you know, it means that God would have a cause, you know, I would assume that I'm not understanding it correctly. But, you know, I wonder if this idea about, you know, theism is only for dummies, maybe, you know, psychologically, maybe these new atheist kind of a figure, well, yeah, they're dumb, you know, and they would believe something as silly as everything has a cause.
To be honest, I don't know if I was following you on that one, Gary.
I don't know if I was following me on that one either. Just basically, you know, if the one of the greatest minds in the world makes such a fallacious, or you think they make such a fallacious argument.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, that would normally red flag somebody that maybe you're missing something, because how could they be considered so smart if they made such a dumb statement?
That the person who's making the fallacious statement is missing something?
Yeah, like Aquinas was so dumb to believe this. Well, you would think, well, maybe Aquinas wouldn't have made a statement like that, and you would check your work.
Right, so, right. Oh, I see what
you're
saying.
I wonder if this psychological thing, they just figure, well, of course, because they're dumb, they believe it's in God. So,
it's sort of an a priori approach, right? They're approaching the argument with this preconceived idea that all religious people are dumb, right?
Yeah, and so when
so it seems as if when they read into the argument, everything must have a cause, they say, oh, that's ridiculous, but they're dumb anyway, so he must have believed that.
Yeah.
Type of
Do
thing.
You think
Rather
anything
than
to that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. It's a good question for reflection. I mean, I must admit, I'll be honest, I don't know what's going on or what's the motivations behind a person like Dennett thinking this great mind of Aquinas could make such a stupid mistake, right? Rather than taking a step back and saying, well, wait a minute, I might be misunderstanding the argument here, because it's impossible. It's unreasonable that such a great mind as Aquinas would make such a stupid mistake, right? So let me take a step back and relook at the arguments rather than going forward and saying, oh yeah, he made this stupid mistake, and so therefore his arguments don't work. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I mean, I don't know Daniel Dennett personally. I haven't asked him, if he's read Aquinas' arguments in depth in order to be able to see that he's the one making the mistake rather than Aquinas. So I'm just going to bow in humility and say, I don't know. But I do know that Dennett and others make these fallacious conclusions about the arguments and are attacking straw men, right? Because they're attacking arguments that are not the arguments put forward by traditional classical theists.
Yeah, yeah, very good. And it's not only him. You know, I don't want to make it seem like I'm picking on Dennett.
I'm just using
The same kind of misrepresentations it seems almost ubiquitous amongst modern works.
Yeah, you do see that. And possibly, you know, Gary, I mean, one possible reason is, you know, some of these classical theistic arguments require a lot of background metaphysics And many modern philosophers simply aren't trained in that classical approach to metaphysics. And so they're going to make fundamental blunders when trying to represent those arguments, as is evidenced in the variety of writings among new atheists. Yeah. So that would be like strategy one, you know, of trying to get somebody to understand that just because someone is, you know, an expert or an expertise in one area doesn't make them competent when it comes to the question of God's existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So what, finishing up on that one, then what's the next step? Where do we go from there?
Yeah. I think one important, another important strategy, Gary, that we could point out is to actually explain how the stats concerning the beliefs of scientists and philosophers actually favor theism. Hmm. So, for example, the National Academy of Sciences that I mentioned, that statistic that I mentioned earlier about the National Academy of Sciences, where it said 93% of those members deny God's existence. Hmm. It's a bit misleading because the Academy only represents a small and select number of scientists with only about 2,000 members, right? But there are more than 2 million scientists employed in the United States. A better overview is a study, a 2009 study done by the Pew Research Center, in which they found 51% of scientists in the United States, not just in the academy, but scientists employed in the United States, 51% believe that God or some higher power exists. 41% reject the concepts of God or a higher power, and 17% actually identify themselves with the term atheist. So with regard to scientists, you actually have the majority believing in God or some higher power, right? Some form of theism of some sort. With regard to philosophers, one study found that 72% of philosophers of religion are theists. So recall, at the outset, I mentioned a stat that said 73% of professional philosophers are atheists. But one study finds that philosophers of religion, 72% of those guys and gals, or theists. Now, that's important, Gary, because the philosophers of religion, these are the folks that study in depth the arguments for God's existence, unlike other philosophers, like, for example, Daniel Dennett, that we mentioned earlier. So it's these folks who would be competent to pontificate on the God question because they've studied it in depth. That's their job. That's their expertise. That's their specialization. And 72% of those folks acknowledge the existence of God. You know, it's interesting. An atheist philosopher, Quentin Smith, he remarked, "God is not dead in academia. He returned to life in the late 60s and is now alive and well in his last academic stronghold, philosophy departments."
Wow, that's a great quote. We're chatting with Carlo Broussard, Master Apologist, on the question of God. More to come on the other side of the break, folks. Listen to Hands on Apologetics. Stay tuned.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle and he says to me, "Hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Justin's show and it's great." And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a
wow.
week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This This is Terry Barber reminding you there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matuta. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. We are chatting with Master Apologist Carlo Broussard about the God question. And right before the break, Carlo, that was an awesome quote. That, yeah, there is a revival, actually back to the 60s, of God believers, theists, in the field of philosophy. That is so different from the popular perspective, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. And in particular, as I mentioned before the break, you know, philosophers of religion, those who are competent in the God question in order to pontificate on it. And so you have the majority. So, you know, in looking at all of this, you know, in a moment here, I can give you some examples of, you know, smart people in the past, giants in the scientific field, et cetera, who acknowledge God's existence. But I think the bottom line here is that folks out there do not need to fear that belief in God puts them in an anti-intellectual crowd. That is not the case, right? So this idea, well, if I want to believe in God, well, then I'm going to get kicked out of the intelligentsia and be part of this anti-intellectual crowd. I got to leave reason at the doorstep of faith. Absolutely not. Right. And so that's the myth that we want to expose, or, you know, we're the myth busters here, right? We want to bust that myth in order that people can know that, hey, yeah, you can actually have faith, believe in God, embrace theism, and be a part of a highly, highly sophisticated intellectual crowd.
Very good. Yeah. You know, that also brings up this idea of religious belief is a belief without evidence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you find this a lot. This is another thing that I tackle in my book in one of the chapters, because many modern atheists will say, well, faith is, you know, I think Dawkins quipped one time in saying, I can't remember which source, if it was in the God Delusion or elsewhere, but saying that the principal vice of any religion is belief without evidence, right? And that's his understanding of the essence of faith. But anybody who's done some work in Christian apologetics knows that that is not the case, because faith, just naturally speaking, is knowledge that we have based on the testimony of another. And that's something we all do, even atheists, right? They go to the grocery store, they buy a can of beans. They have knowledge that there are green beans in the can based upon the label, which is based upon the testimony of the manufacturer who put the label on the can, right? You cross a bridge, you're relying upon the testimony of those construction workers you have good reason to think they're competent in their field to build a bridge that's going to hold a bunch of cars and you're not going to fall into the water or whatever. But supernatural faith or religious faith is knowledge about the things pertaining to God based upon the testimony of God, and especially through the revelation of Jesus Christ. And Christian faith is by far, it is absolutely not belief without evidence. It is a response to the evidence. And this, of course, gets into the whole field of Christian apologetics, which I have some sections in my book where we establish the historical reliability of the Gospels and of Paul's letters and of the New Testament, which is our source from which we gather the data concerning what Jesus said and did. And when we establish that historical basis, and we know that the things these early Christians are telling us Jesus said and did is reliable, then we have historical evidence that this Jewish guy named Jesus claimed to be equal to the Father in such a way that merited the charges of blasphemy on a variety of various occasions, and even merited death because of his claim to be equal to God. And he did not concede, but went forward and embraced that death because of his claims to be equal to God, which tells us he was sincere about it, and then rose from the dead in order to vindicate those claims. These are all things that we can know in light of historical investigation. And that, Gary, is a testimony, right? That's a historically reliable testimony on which I can have knowledge that Jesus is God. Now, granted, it's going to require grace in order, God's help, in order for me to take a step forward and give my life over to Jesus and make an act of faith in Jesus and say, Jesus, you're my Lord, my God, I give my life over to you. But that response of faith is based on the historical testimony that's reliable. And this is why we say our Christian faith is reasonable. And this is something that even the early Christians put forward for the first century people who they were trying to convince. You know, so for example, John tells us in John 20:31, Jesus' signs are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. So notice John didn't ask his listeners and his hearers to leave their reason at the doorstep of faith. He's saying, no, look, here are these wondrous deeds that Jesus performed to vindicate his claims, and I am writing them, I am bearing testimony to them so that you believe. So for John, in his mind, he wants his hearers to believe in Jesus, amen, but to believe based upon his reliable testimony. Because as he says in his first letter, he says, we have heard, we have seen with our eyes, we have looked upon and touched with our hands concerning the word of life. So John is saying, listen, I'm a firsthand witness of this resurrected Jesus. And then he's putting forward, giving that testimony in order that his hearers can believe in Jesus based on that firsthand account, which is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, so that boy, talking about missing the forest through the trees.
Yeah,
the scriptures themselves, the Gospels, and like you point out in 1 John and elsewhere too, is it's nothing but providing evidence for belief in Jesus. So to say right. that the Christian faith is just this fideistic leap that we just believe right. because you know we have some sort of burning in the bosom, you know,
right.
The Holy Spirit talk to me type thing.
Right.
That's contrary to historic Christianity.
Indeed. Now, granted, we do have to consider the question, okay, yeah, this is a testimony. So is John's testimony and the testimony of the other early Christians credible? And that's a fair question, and we have to assess that. And so we employ all of the various historiographical criteria, right, in order to determine if these accounts of what Jesus said and did is historically probable and reliable. And we do all that. Dr. William Lane Craig and other Christian apologists have done a masterful job at that stuff, right? And and showing us and helping us see, like Gary Habermas, Craig Blomberg, helping us see that these testimonies of the early Christians are indeed credible. And thus, our faith in Christ is not a blind impulse of the mind, which our very own catechism, I think in paragraph, it's either 156 or 158, I can't remember, says that faith is not a blind impulse of the mind. For we have these motives of credibility, such as Jesus's miracles, prophecy, etc. But we have those motives of credibility, such as Jesus's miracles, and we can know they were a reality because of the historical reliability of the testimonies of the four Gospels and Paul and other New Testament epistles concerning Jesus's life, and also, you know, the early workings of the early actions of the apostles. So we have a mountain of historical evidence That's the conclusion. Of course, we need to do a lot of work to prove that. But the point is that it does not belong to Christianity to believe without evidence. It belongs to Christianity to believe based on the evidence that Jesus is God in the fullness of the revelation of the Father.
Yeah, yeah, very good. And you can see where that mistaken understanding of faith, that faith is just believing without evidence, well, that wouldn't have any part in academia because there wouldn't be anything to investigate, right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, you can see how if you're operating with this preconceived notion that faith is belief without evidence, and I'm an intellectually credible individual and I want to believe based upon evidence, well, then therefore it's reasonable according to that logic that I'm going to reject faith in God. But of course, we challenge that premise. Faith is belief without evidence. That's the premise we're challenging here and saying, no, we as Christians reject that premise as well. We reject that notion because we don't want to believe without evidence. We want our belief to be rational based on the evidence. And that's what we put forward. We put forward that evidence in Christian apologetics. And I do some of that in my book as well in a summary form in order to sort of whet the appetite of the reader and point them in the right direction of where to go for more in-depth details concerning the historical evidence for Christianity.
Yeah, very good. And the book, by the way, is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. It's available through Catholic Answers Press. And I tell you, Carlo, we finished the hour pretty much. I mean, this is fastest hour in Catholic Talk Radio, I tell you.
Amen, amen. It was a good dojo session, Gary.
Yeah.
I had a great time. You know, one last parting thought is that just it's important to emphasize for those we're talking to that belief based upon testimony is not irrational in and of itself. I mean, even scientists do that. A scientist cannot go back and perform every scientific experiment in order to come to every scientific conclusion on his own. In order to do his work, there is a plethora of testimony of scientists that he must rely on and embrace as true based upon those experiments and their conclusions in order to move forward in his scientific enterprise. So even scientists themselves assume a whole lot of knowledge that they did not account for or come to know by themselves. They have that knowledge based upon the testimony of others. So belief based upon or knowledge based upon belief in the testimony of others is not irrational in and of itself. For us as Christians, we have knowledge, certain things pertaining to God, based upon belief in the testimony of Jesus. And that testimony is rational and credible. And so our belief is rational and credible.
Awesome. That's great. So, Carlo, where can people go to get your stuff, your writings, your blog,
right,
whatever?
Yeah, yeah. They can check out Catholic.com. All of my work is there, although we have so much going through the feed at Catholic.com, sometimes it kind of gets lost in the mix of things. So if they want to get all of my work in particular, which I'm still working on trying to keep updated, right? That's a hard task to accomplish. They can go to CarloBrusard.com, and I have all of my articles, videos, and audio there as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Carlo, for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you, Gary. God bless you, my friend.
And you too. That's Carlo Brusard. Yeah, check out his work and especially his book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And coming up tomorrow, we're going to have Catholic Brian. Brian Mercer is going to join us. We're going to talk about teaching apologetics and evangelizing the youth. What are the obstacles? Are there any keys to doing that? It's going to be a great program. And as always, you know, it flies here on the show. It's time for us to shut down the Midwest Command Center and turn off the dojo lights. It's been great to be with you. I hope you enjoyed the program. Coming up next, high-intensity Catholic talk coming at you with the Terry and Jesse Show. And I hope everybody has an outstanding and blessed day. And God willing, we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.